You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 7th of July 2012 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to The Review, coming to you from Studio One at Midori House here on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Muller, and Robert Bound.
Coming up on today's programme, we'll find out what's been flying off the shelves in the bookshops of Lyon, Vancouver and Caracas.
We had French magazines and newspaper. We had German magazines and newspaper. We had Italian magazines, but not newspapers.
And we will be solving that mystery and also talking music with Anthony Demby, a curator, DJ and former manager of, among others, the Black Eyed Peas.
Plus, we'll be working through the pages of a stack of magazines with Jeremy Leslie, the creative director behind magculture.com, a site dedicated to unearthing magazines outside the mainstream.
All that and a spot of wife carrying coming up this week on The Review here on Monocle 24. And welcome to Studio One at Midori House with The Review, with indeed me, Andrew Muller, and for the first time on this programme, Robert Bound.
I wanted a drum roll, I wanted a kind of trumpet voluntary.
We should have thought of that.
Have you listened to the trail for this show when you're presenting other shows and they say, and at the weekend, this is when Monocle's editors take off their jackets and undo their top buttons.
Really?
That's what they say. That's what this
should,
is.
Should we do that? Should we I've just take off our jackets and undo our top buttons?
You're certainly tieless today, Andrew. That's unlike you not to be wearing a pinstripe suit.
Well, usually for the new shows during the week, I am, of course, wearing a tuxedo and a top hat.
Always remember not to balance your cane on the edge of the studio because it will fall over annoyingly like an umbrella on a bus a very clattering noise.
I did make that mistake the first time. It went over extremely badly, but that was before they put the rack in.
The cane rack.
that's made all the difference.
Schoolboy memories with Andrew Muller.
It's made all the difference to life here in Studio One. From where you are listening to The Review on Monocle 24, it's 12:06 in London. We'll be right back after this.
From London, this is Monocle 24.
Londonist, New Yorkist, Hong Kongist, and Tokyoist. Sind auf Monocle 24.
Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Вы слушаете Monocle 24.
Λόντωστε κασίν, τämä on Monocle 24.
Λόντωμπο, as a Monocle 24.
Λόντζαδάν, βουρεσε Monocle 24.
Λόντωνιστ, σύνο Monocle 24.
De Londres, essa é a Monocle 24.
O que になっているのは Monocle 24.
Afto é no Monocle 24.
Vous écoutez Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
Du lyssnar på Monocle 24.
Kuuntelet Monocle 24.
Viestes Monocle 24.
Esto es Monocle 24.
Detta är Monocle 24.
En Monocle 24, how about ya?
It's amazing how we did all those voices, Andrew, isn't it? Sounding, we were Bulgarian, we were Arabic, we were speaking in Hebrew, we were doing all sorts of things. Did you notice? That's amazing.
Everything but Australian and English.
I know,
in fact.
Exactly. Your Brazilian accent's brilliant.
That has taken some work.
I know.
It didn't come naturally.
And you sort of got a bit of a falsetto going on there as well. It's very, very nice.
I was pretty sure that was you.
Should we do some bookshops?
Let's do that.
We're going to start today with our regular visit to some of the world's best independent bookshops to find out what titles have been selling well in that part of the globe.
And first person we're hearing from is Nadej Bazin, who is from one of the proprietors. Is that a French word? Is there a French word for proprietor? Probably proprietor.
Patron?
Patron.
Patroness.
Something like that. We've already lost all our French listeners right there. Anyway, this is Nadej Bazin from Musicalam in Lyon.
So my name is Nadej, and I'm a bookseller in Musicalam. This is a bookshop which is specialized in music. It's the only one place in France like this. We sell books, only books about music and not sheet papers, scores. We are in the first arrondissement of Lyon, and we are here since 2005. I wanted to talk about the last paperback we received about Claude Debussy, because 2012 is marking the anniversary of the composer. Claude Debussy is a very famous French composer. He composed music in the early 20th century. And he marked a big difference between the Romantics with Wagner and or Chopin, all these people, and the music from today. And so it's very important for us to read books about this great composer. And this is a little biography of the composer for everybody. It's very easy to read. For the next book, I choose a book by Colette. Colette is in France. She was a great, great writer and performer. She knew Claude Debussy too. They knew each other. She was 30 years old when she wrote that book. This is called Au Concert, in the concert. She went very often to the theater, to the opera, to see the performings of her time. And she wrote very, very snobby and very clever critics in that book. And it's a very, it's the expression of the artistic life of her time. So it's very passionate. I really like when she talks about Claude Debussy. She gave him a special nickname, which was Sparklet. And because Claude Debussy wrote musical critics too at the same time as Colette. And so there was like a competition between them too. And it's very, very interesting. And for the final book, I choose a traduction from Gerald Moore, which was a very, very famous accompanist. He played with the most famous singer of our time, of the 20th century, like Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, Victoria de Los Angeles, Fischer Disco, all these people. He talks about his life, okay, but he's also talking about the way we did music at that time. This is, above all, a story of the great singers of our time, seen by this great, great man. It's thanks to him that singers could have their career. Thank you for being here with us today. And you can find more music books here at the 16 Rue Pizet in Lyon, in the first arrondissement. We are open every day. We are always here. The name of the bookshop is Musicalam. Thank you very much.
And that was Nadège Bazin from Musicalam in Lyon. She had quite a sexy accent.
She did. I thought, I've always wondered, do the French actually really speak French? Whether it's just something they're pretending to do when the rest of us are there. And then when we're not, they just speak English to each other in that really quite attractive accent.
In that accent. There was a good word in there. You hear the word passionating?
I did not hear the word passionate.
We can use the word portmanteau properly. It was a new portmanteau word. It's both passionate. I'm a passionate about something and it's fascinating. I think she said the word passionating. I'm going to find that
clip.
Can
we play that whole clip again so we can hear if she
just
said...
Just to find it.
No, they're saying no in the control room. They've got no sense of humour at all. But what we also learned from there was the French word for bookseller, which is bookseller.
Exactly. I rather like that. It's good, isn't it? Like, there's no word in French for entrepreneur. It reminds me of that somehow. One of George W.'s finest moments. And I like a bookshop that's so specific in the books that it sells that someone can talk quite fascinatingly for 5 minutes about a book about Claude Debussy.
Yeah, I just worry that they're able to find a market when you do that very specific thing. Because there used to be that fantastic bookshop on Charing Cross Road which sold nothing but crime fiction.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant, except I think it was one of those shops that people went into and went, wow, this is brilliant, and then didn't buy anything.
And then went to Smith's and bought it.
Yeah, I think you can
run it. Did it go out of business?
I believe so.
What is that? It's criminal.
Hey!
Let's do the next one.
Yes, please, let's do the next one. This is Christopher Brayshaw from Pulp Fiction Books in Vancouver.
So far, it looks like it's only in hardcover.
I'm Christopher Brayshaw, proprietor of Pulp Fiction Books, 12 years old as of last week. On our website, we identify our customers as unconventional and bright and are ferociously interested in reading and have idiosyncratic personal taste.
Cities of the Dead and the Haunted Stage. Yep. There you are.
We pretend to be specialists in hard-boiled crime fiction and science fiction and counterculture and writing of the American Beat Movement, and we do carry an awful lot of books on those topics. A favorite of mine and a favorite of a lot of customers in the shop is a, up until this point, relatively obscure novel by a guy named Don Carpenter, who is an American screenwriter, novelist, and short fiction writer, a very close friend of Richard Brautigan and of Evan S. Cannell. He wrote a book which is often billed as a hard-boiled crime novel called Hard Rain Falling, which came out at the end of the 60s and has been much beloved of contemporary crime writers. But Hard Rain Falling is probably the best of Carpenter's books. He wrote about 12 or 14 titles, all of which are out of print. Hard Rain Falling had been out of print since basically its first publication until it was issued by NYRB. It's a really peculiar book. It's almost impossible to describe because it shifts its genre every maybe 100 or 150 pages. It starts out as a juvenile crime novel set in Portland just after the Second World War. Then it kind of morphs into a pool hustling novel. Then it morphs into a prison novel. Then it morphs into a very moving gay love story and kind of ends up as a satire on the beginning of 60s culture in California. So it's about seven different genres piled into one, and it's impeccably well written. It's been a great favorite of mine, and we've probably sold probably 30 or 40 copies to clients whose taste kind of mirrors our own. We're really excited about a reissue of a very, very famous science fiction novel by the Russian astrophysicist and novelist brother team of Arkady and Boris Strugatsky, called Roadside Picnic, which is the basis for the Tarkovsky film Stalker, which was done in an English translation sometime in the 70s, has apparently been out of print since that time, and the translation is apparently all full of lies, so it's just been reissued in an accurate Russian-to-English translation with an introduction by the terrific science fiction fantasy novelist Ursula Le Guin, and we're glad to, A, have it back in print so that, you know, we have something to offer clients other than a $100 pocket paperback, and the translation, from what I've read of it, is absolutely terrific and far superior to the previous English version. We're selling lots of it as well.
And that was Christopher Brayshaw from Pulp Fiction Books in Vancouver. Another nice, specific kind of niche there.
Well, it's a big independent bookstore, and those are to be encouraged, obviously, because they do struggle. But as according to their website and according to him just there, they do pride themselves on doing that actual customer service thing and knowing something about books. I don't know. It would be nice if it was still possible. And this section on the review every week seems to suggest that it is still possible, but it is... You do wonder how many people go into those bookstores, as we were saying about the crime fiction one that is no longer, well, this is all marvellous. I'm now going to go home and order all this online for 2/3 of the price.
I know, that's the problem, isn't it? I guess it's being a good shopkeeper and being quite friendly and being the kind of person that people want to go back and see and speak to and get recommendations from. It's pretty difficult to do that, I suppose, to get up and open the shutters and make sure you've got all the stock in and then also be nice. Could you manage it?
Well, no, we were talking
it's bad about enough for an hour on Saturday mornings, isn't it?
I know, it's really hard. But no, I used to work in a record shop many, many years ago, which was at the point when, you know, record shops were still a thing. And I do remember the first time I saw the film High Fidelity absolutely wincing with self-recognition, because that's basically what we were like, angry superior guys in record shop.
Oh, man.
Except obviously on the extremely rare occasions that girls came in.
Do you think that's the thing, though, is being that, is it sort of takes the type of person to want to do that, and then we're maybe not the best people at selling stuff?
They
can stock the shelves beautifully and know loads of stuff about everything, then sort of take the piss out of you for sort of buying the wrong record. Don't sell it then.
You tend not to have the people skills. That was where it all fell down. But we'll go now to our final bookshop for this morning, and this is the American Bookshop in Caracas, Venezuela, where the proprietress... or whatever the Venezuelan word for proprietress is.
We'll Google it while it's playing.
We'll look it up. Do you speak Venezuelan, Rob?
No, señor. I think maybe it's Spanish, is it?
Yeah, I know.
Or it's something a bit of Spanish.
I think it's Spanish.
Just Spanish.
To talk to Vicky Yunk, she is the proprietress.
My name is Vicky Yunk. I'm coming from Germany. This is the American Bookshop, founded in 1958 and is located in Caracas, Venezuela, Palos Grandes, in shopping mall in the center of Caracas. And around us, it's beautiful. We have beautiful park almost in front of us, a nice, very nice big plaza. The idea of the American bookshop was born by the newspaper by the name Daily Journal. They've been editing the newspaper only 1 year long, and they decided to open the bookshop as well for all the tourists coming and for all the professionals coming to Venezuela. It was owned by my uncle, and after that I got it. Oh, before it was a lot of magazines. It was amazing how people will come in and even making a row to be able to see the magazines that we have. We had them in different languages. All the magazines that are edited in the States, no matter what subject and how many times a year, all of them being here in the bookshop. We also had French magazines and newspaper. We had German magazines and newspaper. We had Italian magazines, but not newspapers. And people used to buy a lot of novels, adults, students, they would go to the classics and they would sit on the floor in a group and they would study whatever they wanted or what book they choose. And it was very nice to see it. It was really amazing, beautiful. Just you come into the bookshop and you see on one side 5, 6, 7 kids sitting on the floor talking about in English, of course, and learning everything. If they had no money to buy, American bookshop never asked for the money. Now we are living on school books and we are surviving on secondhand books. And we have magazines, dictionaries, but the novels and the bestsellers, they're, let's say, they're just decorating the bookshop. The customers that we still have, although it's already small one, thin, is the middle class, the professionals or future professionals, university students. They still come and they still buy whatever they can, not so often, but still they buy everything at the American bookshop. And I am proud of that.
And that was Vicky Jung from the American Bookshop in Caracas. She is the proprietario. I Googled it in the break while we were listening to it.
Really?
Told you.
You've just done that thing of people who don't speak Spanish, haven't you? Have just like taken the word and put O on the end of it and assumed that assumed that that's it.
I'm on here. Wordreference.com.
Really?
Other translation services are available.
And, and Spanish for proprietor actually is
proprietario. See, this is the kind of thing when you do the show with me, Andrew. It's you get facts. This is facts. It's not just idle piffle. It's not just pontification. These are some hard facts. I've also done that thing which I always do when I go into the studio. I've put the aircon on, and now I've basically fugged it up, and it looks like a sort of like I don't know, possibly a Venezuelan, a Caracan house of ill repute. It's very sweaty in here, so I'm sorry about that.
Never mind. You'll get the hang of it.
Vicky Jung had a great voice, didn't she?
She did have a great voice. It was, you could sort of tell where she, you could tell both at once where she had come from and where she now lived.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is kind of such an unwieldy hybrid, trying to reconcile German and Spanish as formative linguistic influences.
I know, I kind of like it there. It sounds sort of cutely clumsy.
I know, it would be great for being able to bark at people sort of exuberantly.
Yeah, exactly. I want you to do it tomorrow, you could say. Getting very angry because someone hasn't done it tomorrow.
Exactly. Two stereotypes in one joke. See, that's what you get from Monocle 24. Good. But stay with us on the review, because coming up after this break, we'll be meeting Anthony Demby, a heavy hitter in the American music scene who's managed such acts as the Black Eyed Peas, John Legend and Pixie Lott. He's picked three tracks for us to listen to and then talk about. This is the review. We'll be back right after this.
The Olympics are coming to London. And to Monocle 24. From the 27th of July and throughout the Games, we'll be going faster, higher and stronger, bringing some of the icons of the Games into Midori House, as well as taking Midori House out on the road with a series of special shows from across the city. Monocle 24, keeping a sporting eye and an ear on the Olympics.
You are listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bound, and Andrew Miller.
And it's time now for our weekly music review, although that makes it sound like it could also be on the weekly.
Yeah.
Which is just confusing for everybody. But this is definitely The Review, but every week...
You've got to say it as if it's got a small W.
Yeah, I do need to learn how to do that. But every week on The Review, we do have a music review with a special guest. And our special guest this week is Anthony Demby, the curator, consultant, manager and DJ. Does that pretty much cover everything?
I think so.
That's quite a lot. That's quite a list, isn't it? A lot of commas in that sentence. Imagine if someone said what I did and they had, I'd love to have that many commas in my job description. That's good, isn't it?
You probably could. You would need to milk it a bit. Because you could say writer, broadcaster.
Yeah.
What else have you got?
Lover. Fighter. anything in a Michael Jackson lyric, I'm happy to be. It's fine. Can I just say, Anthony managed Black Eyed Peas.
Yes.
Earlier, we were wondering what the Spanish for proprietor was. Do you know what Black Eyed Peas is in Spanish? I just Googled it as well. Alubacaridia. There we are. Let's start.
is there anything else you want to translate while we're on?
I'll let you know. I'll make a hand signal.
Okay. So this week's music review to be accompanied by random Spanish translations from Robert Bound, which is something to look forward to. Anthony, could you tell us a bit first about your company, Humble Riot, which it styles itself as an audible idea shop.
Exactly.
What does that mean?
Well, it has a few different branches. For one, I'm an artist manager. Secondly, I consult brands on music strategy, and thirdly, I do a lot of curation for brands and helping them find their sound. It's uniform with their ideas of company.
So how does that work? They need a soundtrack for advertising or a certain sound to associate with events they put on or music for their shops or...
It could be a sound for a product launch or it could be a venue for a sound. For instance, for the Soho House in New York, I curate the music program, so I bring artists in that are emerging that I feel are congruent with the brand of the Soho House. And that could be anyone from, you know, Gary Clark Jr. to Mayor Hawthorne to James Murphy.
And it's quite a seamless thing, because it's not about something like Soho House in New York. It's about putting on gigs, right? But also, presumably, it's the stuff that plays. It's everything, isn't it? It's everything that you hear in that building.
Yeah.
Is meant to be a sort of seamless
exactly.
thing. That sounds like a great idea. We should be doing this, Andrew.
We should. Does it pay well?
Sometimes, yeah, it does pay well. It pays
I'm
well.
Glad that was
your
second
well.
Question.
We should totally do this. We should find some sort of Spanish name for our consultancy.
Don't worry, I'm working on it.
Excellent, marvelous. But what was the like to sort of pin it down to one particular project? What was the last project you worked on like that you can talk about, and the specific artists you involved and how that process works? Because do you ever come back to the people who've commissioned you and say, "Here's my idea," and they go, "No." Go away and come back with something else.
It hasn't happened yet. They usually trust me so far.
Cool.
Fingers crossed.
So what's in like a specific brand or something you've done a thing like this with?
I did a project with Casio last year. They launched a new camera called the Trix, which is a fairly new product category for Casio because they're known for watches. So they gave me their list of artists they wanted to choose, and a lot of them are artists who are already established. And I was like, listen, you're going into a new arena. You need to have a new artist to replicate what you're doing. So I brought Nicki Minaj in to be the face of this camera, and it was like our first brand integration, which is big. So,
and how does it work? Because obviously, being a manager, you started off, I guess, as a managing act.
Yeah.
Does this sort of show where the music industry is going? The way that your job is changing and kind of evolving into a curator and pairing brands and bands and that sort of thing. Does that sort of show you the story of the music industry in miniature, almost? The fact that there was money and bossing bands and all the rest of it. Now it's kind of pairing them up with other companies.
Yeah, because I think radio is. Traditional radio in America especially is not people don't look to that for just for their new music. They want to find, you'd be playing a video game and hear a song that resonates with you and you go find that band or see a sync in TV or film. So I think brands are noticing that and they realize how powerful music is and want to reach their demographics through pop culture. And music kind of controls what the kids are doing.
An act of broken, I mean, famously in the last like 10, 15 years. It's the, in Europe and UK and maybe probably in the US as well, it was the mobile phone ad. You know, the Andy Warhols kind of became a big band off the back of a Vodafone advert. Yeah. So this is the sort of idea that but you can break bands by means other than, you know, the FM radio and, and MTV, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Well, by way of queuing up the first of the three songs you've chosen for us today, once you get into the business of, I guess, selling music as a commodity and trying to think of commercial applications for music, can you still listen to it for fun and pleasure?
That's why I DJ.
Or are you always hearing, that could work with that project, or I could tie that into that project?
It's kind of a gift and a curse because I'll hear a song and I'll think this could fit with this campaign, or I'll watch a live show and I'll be looking at the lighting and how come this person's over here, and I have to kind of segment my brain. So sometimes I DJ because I'm a fan of music, so I never play artists I work with on purpose.
Okay,
to keep it separate so I can appreciate it in a way that's unbiased.
So the first track we're going to play, which is Cherish the Day by Robert Glasper, is this a song you just play when you're DJing?
I haven't played that one out yet, but I was actually there when he cut it. And it's a cover of the classic Sade song, Cherish the Day, and it was done, him featuring Layla Hathaway, and they cut the song in one take.
Okay.
Well, actually, 4th of July last year.
Okay, well, let's hear it.
Won't go astray, won't be afraid, won't catch me running. You're ruling the way that I move. And I breathe that I move. Only you can rescue me.
Robert Glasper featuring Layla Hathaway with Cherish the Day, the first of the choices from our guest this week, Anthony Denby. You were in the studio when that was recorded?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I was in LA at the same time he was, and I was supposed to consult on that record, but the timing didn't work out with my other projects. He's like, just come by. And I'm a big fan of Layla Hathaway, so I was sitting there with a couple other artists, and they cut this song live on the floor with musicians, and we just were speechless, like, just watching this thing happen. It was pretty amazing.
Are you ever tempted when you're in there in the studio with cutting these tracks with artists to sort of play the triangle, just have one triangle thing so that you get some sort of publishing rights, right?
Right. That's how it works, isn't it? Like 2% of a song, yeah.
Who used to do that? There's all sorts of rock managers used to do that, so they'd not just take a cut, they'd kind of do the thing. Anthony's looking embarrassed. I'm sure this is his modus operandi.
No, I have thought about that a couple of times.
Yeah, or even triangle, you can say to people lightly when it comes up on the radio, I played on that.
Right.
You don't have to sing a background from the other room and say, I sang on that.
Yeah, you can't actually hear, but I accidentally opened the door halfway through. I was on door. That was good. I was kind of thinking, if I would prepare that with a brand, I'd some sort of luxury candle that I'd light when I was having a bath.
Nice.
I don't want to put that image in front of listeners.
Very soothing.
We can move on now.
Does that sound like a good pitch for our as-yet-unfounded consultancy? Does Rob have what it takes? Do you think he hears that and he thinks scented candle?
Anything's possible.
The thing is, Rob is just usually thinking about scented candles.
Right.
So
that's making me sound like a very different man. I'm not always thinking about it. But I think maybe that's the Sade vibe. It's kind of got a kind of chilled, kind of slightly sexy vibe to it.
We'll move along, I think, to your second selection, which is Electric Guest. Do you play the triangle on this?
I play the cowbell on this one.
You play the cowbell on this? Do you actually play the cowbell on this?
I do not.
Oh, damn. No publishing on this one.
Oh, well. Despite the lack of cowbell, this is Under the Gun by Electric Guest. Electric Guest with Under the Gun. That's quite weird. That's sort of like an ironic homage to sort of 70s pop, isn't it?
Yeah.
It reminds me a bit of Denim.
I like that. I really like that. I like the production. Really clean.
Danger Mouse.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah,
sounds a lot cleaner than his normal stuff, which is kind of fuzzy and kind of like gauzy. That sounded kind of a lot cleaner than his normal stuff.
Yeah, a little bit more pop than his other stuff.
I like that.
No, it's cool. It's that sort of ironic homage. You can't quite tell whether they're entirely joking or not. I like that. Yeah, but very reminiscent of that mad early 90s Denim record, Denim, I thought.
By the way, Senchero is cowbell in Spanish.
Senchero Consultancy. That's the name of our branding consultancy.
I didn't want to go through this whole segment without giving you another.
The logo sorts itself out. It's just a big cowbell. This time next year, millionaires. Yeah. The third track you've brought in is Jaipal.
Yeah.
You didn't play cowbell or triangle on this one either?
I did not. I whistled on this one.
You
whistled. It's very faint, though.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, everybody, we'll listen out for the whistling on this. This is Jaipal with Jasmine. Jaipal with Jasmine. It was the whistling that made it, obviously. But
at the end of the song.
Oh, is
we didn't
it?
Get
okay.
to it yet.
Oh, that's a shame.
I don't know if it gets us royalties if we don't play it.
That is a bizarre sounding record. That's a really odd sound. Is it easy to get played on mainstream radio if you make a record that weird?
No, but he's an interesting guy because he's a British guy and he signed to XL and put out maybe 2 songs in 5 years and no one knows anything about him. But when he puts songs out, I mean, people just freak out. To people like Drake has sampled his first single and people just, they're trying to get their hands on this guy, but no one can find him.
I like how it started with those sorts of like Phil Collins kind of like drums, those really echoey, like really sparely produced drums, sort of like that.
Again,
Andrew's making a face.
No, it's that massive 80s over reverb on everything, that great huge reverb drum sound. It's weird to hear it making something of a comeback. But no, your third of 3 excellent choices today, Jaipal, Jasmine. Anthony Denby, absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank
you. Very
Likewise.
Much
Thanks
for
having
in.
Me, guys. I appreciate it.
This is The Review on Monocle 24. We'll be back to leaf through a stack of our favorite magazines right after this.
Vous écoutez Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
Dette Monocle 24.
Essa Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
And a Monocle 24 Tag,
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
Monocle 24 is your song.
Tämä on Monocle 24.
The proper Jalavet, Monocle 24.
Esto es Monocle 24.
After I met on Monocle 24.
The hat at Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
You're listening to Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
And welcome back to The Review. It is Saturday, live on Monocle 24 from Studio 1 at Midori House. Yes, it's not like we wouldn't want people to come in and think we record this on Thursday mornings and then lie to them. It's what can we tell? Say something that proves it's Saturday.
Okay.
Find a current news event. You're going to gloat about the cricket, aren't
Australia
you?
Australia is 72-4.
Yeah, thanks.
And the one day internationals.
That was just churlish and unnecessary.
Our Venezuelan listeners are going to be on tenterhooks about that, aren't they?
They really, really are. You could have found any other currently unfolding story anywhere in the world to demonstrate.
It's just on my desktop. I can't help it.
Why is it just on your desktop, Rob, honestly? Anyway, so yes, Australia. I don't think they're trying in this series terribly much.
It's easy for you to say.
It is, but it's one day cricket. It doesn't really count. It's not a real sport. I know. But anyway, it's that time on The Review where we cast our eye on the magazine industry to unearth new titles and look at new trends and applaud examples of well-thought-out publishing. And to help us do that today, we're joined by Jeremy Leslie, the creative director of Mag Culture, a blog that focuses on all of those things. Jeremy, thank you for coming in.
Welcome. Good to be here.
What have you brought in for us today? You have a stack of magazines over there.
It's a small stack, but
I like that cover on the top one.
This is my new favourite magazine, which is slightly strange, given that I can't read any of it. It's in German, and German is not by any means my first language. It's called Froh, and it comes from Cologne. And if I told you The title means happy or glad, and it's published by a group involved in Christian charity work. It might seem a strange choice to be bringing a magazine from that kind of provenance here today. But
I'm not reaching for their subscriptions page so far.
Okay, so why is it here?
It's an epistle from the far edge of mag culture, literally.
Each issue is themed, and this one is themed on play. The reason it's it is my new favourite magazine is that it's a beautiful balance of design and content, and that's what good magazines are all about. So even though I can't quite grasp the nettle of the exact nature of the content, I can see that it's a beautifully structured magazine, beautifully paced. And they're having great fun with it, and the enjoyment shines through, even if one isn't getting the language.
There's a lot of different stuff going on there. Lots of different typefaces, bits of sort of graphic design chucked in on pages of type. Lots of illustration. Looks like it's all original, sort of commissioned illustration.
There's a lot of lovely illustration, but there's a lot of just general playfulness. So the theme being play. They have there's a basic typeface and structure and grid to it all, but then they play with it, and the theme play has allowed them to muck around with running things upside down occasionally. There's lots of sort of nostalgic childhood-based things like dot-to-dot puzzles and things like this, and it's just the passion for what they're doing shines through. It's a feel-good piece.
We need a dot-to-dot in Monocle.
We should totally do that.
No, I haven't got one in there.
Can you add that to the ideas list?
Yeah, well, dot-to-dot.
You could run it next to the horoscopes. Yeah,
I did see it really. I can't wait for that. That's going to be the. I'll edit that page.
The Monocle's horoscopes page. How would that even go?
Sudoku. All the classics.
It'll be the most popular page in the
I know, it always is. They're always the best. Yeah, Fro, I sort of like that. And the photography on the cover, it's sort of a bit sort of it's a bit Instagram, it's a bit sort of cineate, isn't it? It's got a nice kind of sort of forgotten summer quality to it.
But there's just a lot of changes of texture throughout, which I like a lot.
We're making lots of noise here.
We're rustling magazines.
Yeah, it's good.
It's verite.
I don't mind.
That's what it is.
Verite.
It's the one sense of magazine we can communicate on the radio.
I know, exactly. It's good. So what have you got? You've picked out something there, Andrew.
I have Calamat, which has a kind of attractive sort of lo-fi appearance to it. Sort of, I think they're trying to do kind of old-school 70s Samizdat. Tell us about Calamat. What did you like about this one?
The reason I wanted to bring that along was that it's a recent publication that's turned out in print, having started online. And I think that's an interesting development in these days when everyone's going on about print ending and everything going online. This is one that started off online, but both as a website and a blog and a kind of page turner PDF thing. And they've moved into print. It's also interesting from the point of view it's dealing with Arab culture and trying to provide an alternative voice for the Arab world. So the content is interesting in that respect, but it's just it's representative of a group of magazines that are turning up, having started online.
Yeah,
which I think is a very interesting trend.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to sort of nice to see that with people thinking that the sort of arrival is putting it on paper.
Yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah.
And what's the content? What's the sort of content like? It looks like it's got a lot of design going on in it. Lots of different sections. Lots of different sort of. It's quite a busy. Mag.
It's busy. I mean, it does cover multiple countries. It's dealing with everything from culture to politics. And obviously a part of it is the Arab Spring. As the voice of elements of that in it. But it is, I mean, it's across the current affairs, culture, art and design.
And is your Arabic very good or is it published in English?
Luckily it's in English.
Whereabouts,
just checking.
Whereabouts are they based?
That's the one thing I haven't been able to establish. And you're not meant to ask me that.
Oh, okay.
We could spend about 3 or 4 minutes of sort of just not saying anything, just looking on the masthead.
No, it's
hidden. It's hidden. Which I'm not sure whether that means it's not.
It seems like it probably comes out of Dubai. Is it?
It's actually printed in West Sussex and distributed
England,
by somebody in Paris, but that doesn't really tell us. It's a mysterious magazine. It does look beautiful. It's got that kind of. Reminds me a little bit of The Face, actually, which I worked for several centuries ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It has a bit of that look about it.
Mm, it does actually,
yeah. Yeah. But
for me, it's more about the content and the way that it's now it's on both channels. It's both print and digital. That's the key to the magazine. It has a curious look that I think is sourced from its origins online.
And do you, I wanted to ask you about that, you know, being such a mag fancier, Jeremy, seeing that when people go from online to print, is it a sort of, you know, the design, sort of the ethos of the design or the look of the thing, is that always carried straight across? Because it's not the, Kalamata isn't the first, you know, website to become a magazine. Do you see there's quite a lot of continuity between what they do online?
Well, that's
and what
always
they
do the challenge
off.
Between the two different channels is how to maintain the character whilst making it work in the different media.
Yeah. I mean,
it's very arguably, perhaps Kalamata's taken too much from the web into its print edition.
I notice they're also maintaining that relationship back in the other direction. They have a beautiful spread here on antique Egyptian film posters, which are just absolutely glorious.
They're
but
very cool.
To get further on that, they've got a QR code on the page. The idea being that you just point your phone at it, and presumably that calls up extra content on your phone. So that's actually, that's an interesting idea, making the print magazine work as kind of a vanguard for the website. But no, it's a good-looking magazine. I like the look of that.
What does it smell like? I'm kind of very much into
very important to smell it.
It does smell good.
I love,
I love
the smell
actually.
Of a thing.
It does smell
good. That's good, yeah. It has got that. That's nice. That's
I
good
think
smell.
You find Fro might be even better.
Fro, yeah. It looks like it's kind of got that sort of matte paper stock smell.
It's drenched in ink.
Drenched in ink.
Yeah.
Kind of. That's good.
I was intrigued by another one you'd brought along just because I like the idea of. Well, there's two things I like about this. One is that the magazine is called Hot Rum Cow, and there's not enough magazines with the word cow in their title, and it's subtitled Adventures in the World of Drinking. So is this a magazine full of articles about, you know, which is the best hedge to wake up in, or, you know, police stations to avoid? Is it a bit more refined and sophisticated than that?
It's the first issue, and they haven't covered off those topics yet, although I dare say at some point it's certainly come there.
I'll be pitching them as soon as I say that.
It's another job for our brand consultancy, Sincera, Andrew. I think they need us.
They've probably already added them to their next issues running this.
So but, Drinking Magazine, this is a great idea. We've got all sorts of brilliant things written about drinking and yet no magazine devoted to it, really.
Yeah, the men's magazine market in particular have had an obsession with the culture of drinking. But as you're right, there's not really been a single magazine as an outlet for the whole culture and our love of drink.
Culture of drink. What are you doing? I'm just exploring the culture of drink. It's 4 a.m. You've just been sick. You know,
I'm on a cultural outing.
I've been exploring a lot of culture this evening. That's why it's taken until 4 a.m. I'm as cultured as a newt. This point.
And what's the sort of vibe of it? Is it serious? Is it essays? Is it sort of
It's across the board. It's a celebration of as much. I mean, to joke about the culture side of it, but it's a serious point really. It's looking at the industry and the social background and some of the history, but also talking about decent pubs and histories of drinks and. There's a lot of tangential thinking. There's quite a lot of magazines like this now, small magazines that are looking at a single subject, but they're using that subject as a kind of prism to look at people.
Again,
it's
an absolutely beautifully designed magazine. There's a lovely, gorgeous looking feature on one of my very favourite pubs in the United Kingdom, which is the Crown on Great Victoria Street in Belfast.
Which is
absolutely beautiful old school pub.
It's fantastically Victorian thing.
Which has survived. I believe the pub next door, which was nearly as nice, I remember getting blown up at one point in the 90s. And as this article does make clear, they lost a lot of their antique glass in one. It's just across the road from the Europa Hotel in Belfast, which kind of prides itself on being the most bombed building in Europe. It was actually blown up about 30 times during the Troubles. And in one explosion in the 90s, actually took all the antique glass out of the front of the Crown. But they apparently just swept it all up and were open again later that day.
It's kind of like a band which calls itself the same name despite all its members having changed. It's got sort of one original pewter tankard in it from 1832.
Not quite. It's now overseen by the National Trust, who regard it as a genuine architectural treasure, which it is. But I like Hot Rum Cow. I'm going to take one of these away with me.
Is that a drink, Hot Rum Cow? Presumably,
it is a drink. It is a drink. Yeah,
it's a cocktail.
The magazine's from Edinburgh, and one of the most curious pieces in it is about the Scottish wine industry.
Oh gosh.
Stop.
Yes, exactly. Where on earth is it warm enough in Scotland to grow vines? Dumfries.
I have to pick up the magazine.
buy Hot Rum Cow now
or find out.
Jeremy Leslie's got an interest in this magazine, I can tell.
Or are they just putting Buckfast in fancy bottles and hoping nobody will notice?
Try having a couple of drinks and saying that.
What, Buckfast in fancy bottles?
We should have done this. Should be a later show, shouldn't it? We should have done it after a nice luncheon.
Yeah,
after a few Hot Rum Cows.
We really, really should have. Thank you very much for coming in today, Jeremy Leslie of Mag Culture with
your stack
of independent magazines. That was great fun.
Pleasure.
You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24.
Londonból, ez a Monocle 24.
Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
De Londres, ez a Monocle 24.
De Londres, este es Monocle 24.
London kala. Monocle 24 です.
De Londres, essa é a Monocle 24.
Londonist, sin a Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Λοντόστα, τέμα on Monocle 24.
Λόντρεδαν, βουρεσε Monocle 24.
Λόντον καρα, Monocle 24.
You've tuned into The Review on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Band, and Andrew Muller. We're coming to the tail end of the show, but before we go, how heavy is your wife? The answer to that could indicate how you perform at the annual Wife Racing Championships in Finland. The rules are simple. The fastest to carry their spouse down a 832-foot track wins. The prize at stake is a crate of beer equal to the weight of the winner's wife, and Monocle's Michael Booth is at the event in Sokkerville and joins us now. Michael, thanks for joining us live from the Wife Carrying Championships.
Why is anyone interested in Silverstone? Why do we care about Wimbledon or Silverstone? Everyone should be here for this sporting event of the year. London 2012, forget it. It's all about wife carrying.
Are there wife carrying lanes like there are Olympic bus routes in London? Is it that big an event, Michael?
Well, basically, we're in the middle of nowhere, a long way from anywhere, right in the heart of Finland, in the middle of forest, and I think there's only bears and wolves for 100 kilometres. But it's very nice. It's a kind of large village fake kind of atmosphere. But it's hard to figure out how seriously they're taking it, because some of the competitors are quite clearly very fit and very athletic. Others are dressed as Smurfs and Obelix, so it's kind of a weird mix.
Michael, I understand that one of the... Well, I have been researching wife carrying before coming on air, and how did the three-time defending champions Taisto Mittanen and Kristiina Happonen get on, or have they not actually taken to the field yet?
Well, what we've had so far is the team event, which was won by a Finnish team. And they're literally any minute now about to kick off with the individual event. And the last 2 years, I believe it's been won by Finnish competitors. And the Estonians are looking to reassert their wife-carrying
indeed, because this particular Finnish couple have won the last three on the bounce, according to what I've learnt. But before that, there was a quite lengthy period of Estonian hegemony.
Precisely, yes. The Estonians had the wife-carrying stuff kind of pretty much sewn up. So I think there are also Australians here and Americans competing and international media. It's quite a brouhaha, but also in a very Finnish kind of way. They take their eccentricity in a way very seriously. They're very professional about being eccentric, but also there's a very relaxed relaxed vibe. It's quite calm and peaceful.
And Michael, where does the kudos lie at the wife carrying championships? Is it having a slim wife that you can carry easily and therefore win, or is it having a bulky spouse and being able to but having the kind of raw power to be able to drag her over the finishing line?
No. It's all about getting the skinnier wife as possible. And you don't have to be married to the person you're carrying, I discovered. I was a bit disappointed when I heard that. I thought it took away the romance of the event, but you can borrow someone else's wife.
Well, that's a sort of cold pack, isn't it?
This is outrageous. Then it's not wife carrying. Is this one of the... Is there a genuine schism in the sport? I mean, I can imagine a breakaway wife-carrying federation being set up that were determined to uphold the old values of wife-carrying.
Authentic spouses, yeah. And I haven't seen any gay couples or lesbian couples either, which, you know, they don't win.
Well, that would be the civil partner carrying championships.
Right, yeah.
And what's the track like? Is it a grass track? I mean, presumably it has to be soft in case a large wife totters off the shoulders of the husband. It has. I mean, what sort of safety measures are in place, Michael? I'm very concerned about health and safety.
Well, then you would really appreciate they have a water jump thing, like a big pool.
They have a man
in full snorkeling gear and full wetsuit ready to rescue it. It's only about 2 feet deep, but they have an ambulance on hand, they have a snorkeler on hand, so I think everything's taken care of. Do you know what the worst element of it is? During the relay, the team relay, after you carried your wife through the water course, you have to stop and drink a bottle of fizzy water. I have no idea why, but they're making everyone do this halfway through the course, and that's really sorting the men from the boys, because there are some poor guys are really struggling to down that bottle of very fizzy water before continuing, and if you're into public vomiting, this is the place to come for that.
I've just one final question. Is it a sportswear event, or it sounds very much like it might be a national dress event?
No national dress. No, I haven't. I have a keen radar for national dress.
Lycra.
I love the good national costume, but no, it's all skin tight lycra, high performance fabrics.
All right, Michael, we're going to have to leave it there. Enjoy the individual event, and we'll speak to you soon. That's almost it, isn't it, Andrew?
That is almost it. That does pretty much bring us to the end of our Saturday review, in which I did get to utter the phrase Estonian hegemony. And for now, it's goodbye from all of us here at Midori House. The show today was produced by Adrian Craddock, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and our studio manager was Toby Hammond.
And we're heading back over to... Where are we going for the weekend edition? Who knows where we're going
next? Absolutely no
idea. It's a mystery, isn't it?
It's the mystery weekend edition.
It is. And don't forget to tune in to the Monocle Weekly, which will be on tomorrow, midday, Sunday. For the moment, for me, Robert Band.
And me, Andrew Muller.
We'd like to wish you a very happy weekend, and thanks for tuning in.
Good afternoon.